session number 12401. This is Real One.
Colonel Mando, Real One. When and how did you come to go to Malaya in the first place, please?
Well, I was G1 at Colchester, and I'd only just gone there and was busy doing all the training programs when I was suddenly told that by the end of April 1949, I had to be in Malaya in command of my battalion. I think the CO, or the sudden emergency must have taken place, and I had to go out there rather quickly.
How did you get there?
I was flown out in a Sunderland flying boat.
And you say that you went there in 49, did you? Because here on this form you've written 1950.
Yes. It is a long time ago, and I may well have made a mistake over the dates. But,
which do you think is the more accurate then, 1949 or 1950?
I think it was 49, but I've got the book here which says when I arrived in Malaya.
We just looked up the regimental history of the regiment in Malaya, and it turns out to be spring 1950. That
correct,
you
yes.
Was your journey out there without incident?
Yes, completely. I seem to remember I lost my hat in the aeroplane. It had two decks and a cocktail bar on the top deck and that sort of thing. Very comfortable journey. Took about 3 or 4 days to get out there. No incident.
How much did you know about the situation in Malaya before you went?
Not a damn thing, really. In fact, it's been my experience that I was sent to Calcutta to deal with the great Calcutta killings and the awful slaughter that was going on in India from Berlin, where I'd been sent as a German-speaking chap who knew all about Germans. I had no experience of India at all. I had no experience of Malaya. I'd never been in a jungle. But in the army, that does happen. You just get pitchforked into things and told to get on with it.
Were you able to consult with anybody in Britain who did know something about Malaya before you went?
I didn't, because I was so concerned to get to know what the state of the battalion was. I went to see the War Office about officers, and the officer in charge of records about other ranks, and the colonel of the regiment about people that I wanted to know who would be coming out to see me and that sort of thing. So, and of course I had to give up my quarter, and my wife and family had to remain in Colchester. I only had about a fortnight, so I didn't have any chance to go on any jungle exercises or anything like that. No, we just went straight out there, straight into it.
Where did you arrive in Malaya?
Singapore. Arrived in Singapore, where I was seen by the GOC or somebody or other out there, and then straight up to Kuala Pila and into the jungle.
Where is Kuala Pila?
Kuala Pila is in Negeri Sembilan, which is in the middle of Malaya, roughly, just above Johor, and below, I'm not sure what it's below, in the middle.
So your battalion was stationed at Kuala
Pila?
Yes. What was the setup there? How were they accommodated and so on?
The companies were scattered around in tents, and the whole time we were out there, the men had to live in tents, which I thought was awful. And battalion headquarters was in Kuala Pila itself, and there was some sort of rest house there we were in. We were sharing a Kuala Pila with the 6th Gurkhas, I think it was the 6th Gurkhas. And when I arrived there on the veranda of the guest house was a chap, Lieutenant Colonel Townsend, who'd been at Sandhurst with me, and he said, "Hello, Darcy, how are you?" And so he was the first person I met in Malaya who could tell me anything about what was going on.
What did he tell you?
Well, he was sharing the job in Kuala Pila with us, but what he had to tell me wasn't very useful for us, because the Gurkhas and the British soldiers are so very different, and the Gurkhas tended to hunt the bandits like a hound following scent. But I saw straight away that the Green Howards were no good at that at all, and that our tactics must be quite different, and I decided what we must do is to act as a cat sitting outside a mouse hole. So I didn't get much out of Peter Townsend that was any good to us.
Why were the Green Howards not any use using the Gurkha tactics of pursuing the guerrillas?
Well, first of all, Gurkhas were all regulars, and we had national servicemen. The national serviceman would arrive out in Malaya and would spend 3 or 4, perhaps weeks, getting acclimatized and getting some idea of jungle craft and that sort of thing. And then, when he was quite useful and becoming as good as a Gurkha, he would go home to England on release. So I was turning out, in fact, more civilians for civilian life in England than Eton were turning out scholars in England. I was turning out about 300 a year. And I don't think our chaps, they're good solid soldiers, the Yorkshiremen, but they're mainly, many of them from Middlesbrough, townsmen, and this wasn't quite their line of country, I didn't think. I found that the battalion was being used to hunt bandits, and I found that a company would go into a vast area of jungle, 30 miles by 20 miles or something like that, and it would go in single file, and the chances of it hitting any bandits in that 30 mile wide stretch of jungle was more or less nil. Sometimes the whole area would be full of water and no sensible bandit would be anywhere near it. And so I decided that this business of sending a whole company out to chase bandits in an area where perhaps there was very little likelihood of bandits being was a complete waste of time. And what we would do very much better was to lie in wait and lurk on the edges of the jungle, find out where they came in and out, and ambush them and try and deal with them when they came out, rather than going to search for them in the middle, and let the Gurkhas do the chivvying.
Was this your own idea, or was it put to you by somebody who'd already been there some time?
No, it was my idea, because the generals and the brigadiers and the COs, in many cases, felt that they were out there and they had to earn their keep and that sort of thing, and they wanted to organize these vast exercises. And I found my adjutant writing tremendous operation orders, sending the companies out and artillery fire and mortar barrages to chivvy the bandits about the place. And the first thing I did was to abolish all operation orders. And I made each company commander responsible for his area and to get to know it and to get to know and get information there about the bandits in his area and make it a company commander and a platoon commander's war rather than a general's war. And I thought this business of these generals organizing vast strikes and things into jungle was really rather a waste of time. And we were, I think I was right in that when we started to learn how to be quiet and how to ambush and how to get these chaps when they came out, we started killing bandits, whereas before we didn't kill any.
Where did the company commanders get their intelligence from?
from the local police, from liaison with planters in their areas, and with anybody who, Malays and Chinese, whom they could contact, and they could gain their confidence. And of course, if some ambush or something had happened, they were there on the spot, and they would see what had happened and be able to talk to people and ask them what and how it had all happened and get information in that way.
But hadn't they been getting this kind of intelligence before you came?
Well, they were being sent out on these vast exercises and things, and were told to go into an area, and the 20th Field Regiment would be shooting up this bit of jungle, and the Air Force would be bombing that bit of jungle, and they were to go in here and there and everywhere, and 3 weeks later they would emerge from the jungle, having learnt nothing, heard nothing, seen nothing, and having, in my opinion, wasted their time, and having had no effect on the bandits at all, and having gained no information. I thought it was no good.
Did you come across any opposition to these ideas from the people below you or above you?
No. I think I remember that I asked the brigadier and the general up in Malaya to leave me alone for a month or two and let me get on with it and try and find out what was what. And in that month or two, we started to function, and so I was left alone, largely. We were occasionally sent in to do various exercises and things. And of course, if you did get the feeling in the battalion area that a certain area was getting a bit hot from the bandit point of view, you would concentrate your companies in that area, and one would take charge a little bit. One didn't leave it entirely to the company commander. But basically, I said, this is a company commander's war, you've got to get on with it, and you've got to do the job in your own area.
How did the battalion react to your new tactics?
They started to get results. And as a result of that, they got to be enormously keen. The competition between the companies was terrific. And people wouldn't take leave. They only wanted to get into the jungle after these bandits, and it was a tremendous sort of tiger shoot for the troops. I think I had no disciplinary problems at all in the battalion. They were so frightfully keen because we were doing well. It acted as a tremendous tonic.
What did you think to the local police force?
What did I?
Think to the local police force.
That's a very difficult question. My local police, when we went to Kuala Pila, I was very new to this, and I don't really remember very much about liaising with the police. But we pretty soon moved down to Tampin, and I got into very good terms with the Tampin police, and I had the very greatest respect for them. I sent my very best officer, to be my intelligence officer, to act with the police, or follow up information, that sort of thing. And I think they had a great respect for us, and we had a very great respect for them. I think got on very well with them.
So you were only in Kuala Pila a short time,
yes,
before the battalion was moved to,
yes,
Tampin?
Moved to Tampin, yes.
Yeah. Why were you moved?
We were moved all the time. My companies were moved about like men on a chessboard. When we were in Tampin, I got personally, as CO, got sent down to Malacca, and my second in command took over the battalion in Tampin. We had companies sent off here, there, and everywhere. Or alternatively, I might send a company off somewhere or another because I thought it was better placed to kill bandits somewhere else. So we were always moving about. The battalion was never in one place. We had one company 30 miles north, another one 45 miles to the west, another one to the south and to the east. I don't think probably the companies, the battalion was never in an area less than about 75 or 100 miles long or wide. So it was a very widespread thing. We weren't centrally placed anywhere.
Where is Tampin?
Tampin is on the railway line between Johor and Singapore, Johor and Seremban, quite close to Seremban, and just south of Kuala Pila. Just at about 20-30 miles into Negeri Sembilan.
Do you think it was a good idea for to have all this moving about?
When we went to Tampin, I didn't think much of it as an idea, because we took over from a gunner regiment, 20th Field Regiment, and their main responsibility was to see that the railway line was not sabotaged, and I thought that was not very interesting as an infantry chap who wanted to get after the bandits. But we pretty soon found that we were good at it, and we got after the bandits, and we found out where they were, and we started killing them. And the railway line was only sabotaged once during the time we were in Tampin. So we managed to keep the railway line open, and also did our bit, I think, in regard to killing bandits. And of course our job was also to prevent the bandits killing planters and police and Chinese and Malays. We did that pretty well too.
What was your own attitude towards the enemy? Did you hate them or what?
No. What I felt about them was that we knew so little about them. And I thought that we ought to send people into the jungle more to get to know them a little bit and talk to them and say, come along, you know. And when I gave up command, or was about to give up command, I volunteered to do that myself and to be sent into the jungle and say, now look, why can't we talk and get to know each other a bit better? What are you trying to do? You're not succeeding. Is there any point in your going on arguing with them?
Who were you talking to?
Well, that's what we to the chiefs of the bandits, to the local commanders, or even to the chief of all the bandits in Malaya. You remember, the jungle is neutral. We had that chap who was I think escaped from the Japanese, went into the jungle, and he spent months, if not years, in the jungle with these bandits.
Spencer Chapman.
Spencer Chapman, yes. Well, I thought we needed another Spencer Chapman there. And I thought that the information we got from the police was rather too much from this side of the table. And what we ought to be doing is to have people in the other side of the table, quite openly or secretly. I don't think we had any... That's what I felt about it. We didn't know enough about them.
But you couldn't talk to the bandits unless you'd captured them.
We did capture them and were able to talk to them, but why shouldn't I go to some logging camp where I knew that the bandits came in for food and that sort of thing, and say, look, I want to talk to your people. I'm unarmed. I'm not trying to kill anybody. I just want to talk to you and to get to know you, and you can ask me questions and get to know each other a bit.
So talking to Chinese civilians in the jungle?
Yes, yes.
Who you assumed were helping the enemy?
Well, I thought that was our great weakness, that we didn't have any basic information, or very little basic information, of how they thought, what their ideas, their political, the main top people. We knew that they lived in camps, and we knew their problems with food and that sort of thing, but we didn't know what was going on in the minds of people like Chin Peng, who was the head bandit. And I thought we ought to try and do something about that and remedy it.
But how could you speak to them if you didn't speak Chinese?
Well, how could Spencer Chapman? Spencer Chapman, if you remember, in the jungle, he tried to learn Chinese, and they taught him a different dialect every day, so he never could learn anything. And they would have all the advantages there, because only with bandits who could speak English could they speak to me or anybody else. But one would be able to communicate, presumably, with them.
But did you take a translator?
It wasn't accepted. My offer was not accepted. But I did propose that. You asked me what I thought about the bandits.
Which offer wasn't accepted?
My offer to go in at the end of my term of CO, go in there and try and contact them and talk to them and ask them what the hell they thought they were really doing, and didn't they realize that they'd lost the war, and wouldn't it be much better for us all to be friends and to stop murdering people and torturing them and doing most terrible things to them that they did. They weren't making friends with them, and they were losing the war over and over, hand over fist, every day of the week. I should have thought that line of country could be put over to them, and perhaps they could be got out and made to think differently from how they were thinking.
So you never actually did carry this out, to go in
no.
and talk
no.
to China?
No, I was sent down to Singapore afterwards as counterintelligence.
So you were telling me earlier that you didn't actually hit the enemy?
No. I thought the things they did were perfectly awful. If they captured somebody and wanted to interrogate them, they would beat them and cut them with knives and sort of slow torture and terrible things, and then they would finally shoot them. They were very, very cruel people.
Did you come across any specific instances of that in your area?
Oh, yes.
What did you come across?
Well, there was one woman who led us to a camp, and we were able to kill people in the camp, destroy the camp, and one thing or another. We had a great success there. We killed about 5 before breakfast, I think, one morning. And she wouldn't take her compensation, she was entitled to, for giving information. She wouldn't be protected. She wouldn't allow the police to whisk her away to safety. And she disappeared. And she was taken into the jungle, and she was tortured and shot by somebody gave away the fact that she was the person who had led us to the camp, and so they got their revenge on her. And that was a terrible thing, because she was somebody who had done her duty, given us information, helped us, and the fact that she had been so cruelly betrayed and finally met such a terrible end didn't encourage other people to behave like that at all. So,
was her body recovered?
No.
How did you know she'd been killed?
We heard it from people whom we subsequently interrogated, and we knew that she was killed. She was shot, finally.
Where was this, in Malaya?
This is Tampin.
How had you made contact with her in the first place? Was she a captive, or someone who'd surrendered, or what?
No, I think it was the local company commander and the police who were talking to tappers on the estate, and she said that she could lead us, that we knew that the bandits were coming in, and she said she could lead us to the camp where they came from, and so on and so forth. In one case, we had surrendered people surrendering from the camp. A man and his wife surrendered from the camp and led us back to the camp they just surrendered from. We were getting information because we'd got the upper hand.
So the woman informer had been a rubber tapper, had she?
Yes, a Chinese rubber tapper.
Why do you think she decided to speak?
I can't remember now, but she had confidence that the soldiers would protect the estate and were protecting the estate, and that the communists were bad guys who were doing nasty, evil, naughty things. And she just felt that if she could help the good guys to get the better of the bad guys, that life would be better for her, I think.
Was she old or young?
I don't remember how old she was. She was quite young, I think. About 30-ish sort of thing. But I can't remember.
Did you go with the troops whom she led into the jungle?
I tried to on that one occasion. And when I'd gone a very short distance into the jungle, I was attacked by a swarm of jungle wasps, which are very unpleasant things, and I got stung twice on the face. And I thought my face was expanding and contracting in the most extraordinary way, and I thought I should be a handicap to the chaps. So I went back and never got there.
And you said you were talking earlier about the people who'd surrendered from the camp.
Yes.
Where was that?
That was also in Tampin. They surrendered. There was a wife and a husband, both Chinese, and they were very rarely able to be together. And they plotted to surrender because they were disillusioned with the communists, and they didn't want to be communists. They wanted, I think the wife never had been a communist, but he was a communist. And they had to wait until they were both on sentry go at the same time. And when they were on sentry go at the same time at night, they were able to walk away together. They didn't want one to surrender and the other one to be left. So they walked in together, and they led us back to the camp from which they had surrendered. That was also in Tampin.
Was that a successful raid?
Oh yes, very successful.
What happened then?
We killed quite a lot of them. We destroyed the camp. We got a lot of documents, a lot of food, and a lot of arms and ammunition back. And it was one of the many occasions where we gradually got the upper hand over the bandits in the Tampin area, and eventually made them into a force which was really quite ineffective.
Did you go in with that raid?
No, I didn't. I think I was down in Malacca at that time.
What happened to those two surrendered enemy personnel? Did they survive or were they caught?
They survived. They worked with the local police as surrendered enemy personnel, SEPs they were called, and they were not shot. They survived, as far as I know, and probably still living in Malaya.
Were they Chinese?
Yes.